So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really happy to have you listening in as we talk about some of the changes to Wisconsin's invasive plant regulations. That's one thing we want to talk about, zero in on. Another thing we want to zero in on is an invasive earthworm that is creating some problems. We've got a couple of guests for you. Kelly Kearns has been with us many times. She is the invasive plant coordinator for the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation Program of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Kelly, always great to see you. Thanks for coming by today.
Thank you.
Also with us today by phone, we have Bernie Williams. Bernie's been with us as well as an invasive species specialist with Forest Health of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Bernie, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
So we're looking forward to visiting with them and also getting your questions. What invasives, do you want to know some information, some things about the new regulations regarding invasives? Do you have some questions about these earthworms? What measures do you take to control invasives and prevent their spread? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would certainly love to hear from you. And Bernie, there are invasive earthworms in Wisconsin. First, tell us about the ones that we've been dealing with for quite a while.
Well, Larry, the ones that you're all familiar with are all the European species in Wisconsin. So all of the night crawlers, the ones that you're using for your composting, they're really widespread. They're ubiquitous throughout the state. So you can find them in your backyard. You can find them in your parks. You can find them in the forest. But what few people realize is that they're all non-native invasive species. And they, when they're in areas where they shouldn't be, they can cause a lot of different problems, particularly in a forest. And the new species that we're looking at that we recently discovered in the Arboretum in 2013 is the crazy worm. So it's an East Asian species, which is relatively a new arrival to the state. We had listed it on NR40 in 2009 as a prohibited species because we knew that it would cause, it was a huge threat to the ecosystems and to the forest. And so this discovery for us was unique because initially we didn't think that this particular worm would be able to overwinter in Wisconsin. And we did find out that this worm in particular is different than all of the other European species that we currently have in the state in that its life cycle is different. This particular worm is more on a hatch cycle. So the adults don't winter over through the winter, but their cocoons persist in the soil. And so those cocoons, when the soil temperature is ambient, they hatch, and they're reproductive at 60 days. So their life cycle is much faster than a European earthworm. So this worm goes through a two-hatch cycle. So when it first hatches, you count 60 days until the next hatch, and then you get to these levels where in late fall that you have really large levels of them. So when we discovered them in the Arboretum last fall, we discovered that we had you could actually just walk into certain areas of the Arboretum and you could just disturb the soil a bit and you would find quite a few of them moving around. And they're called, their common names are the Alabama jumper, the crazy worm, the snake worm, because they're much more aggressive in their behavior than the European species. So it makes them really unique in that factor when you compare them to European species. They're called crazy because they're very excitable and they're aggressive. And I don't know, Kelly, do you want to add anything to that about them?
Well, just that they seem to cause not only problems in forests where the other European earthworms that have been here for a while cause a lot of problems as well, but there may also be problems in gardens and in just landscapes, and particularly in areas that are a little bit more shaded. And it appears that they cause significant changes to the soil to the point that the soil can't function the way that soil would normally function.
So in what ways is it? Are they sucking nutrients out? Are they changing the nature of the soil then? Making it more acid or basic or?
Bernie, how about you cover that?
Well, so the particular thing with this worm, it creates a soil signature, which is completely unique to this earthworm. So whereas earthworms, you know, every gardener loves them because, you know, they're great for moving the soil, aerating the soil. They're moving things around in your garden. The crazy worm is hungry. So it consumes everything on the top of the soil. So when you look, if you were to walk into a forest, you want to walk into a forest and you want to have a complete dust layer. You want to at least have some leaf litter on that soil surface because those leaves are acting almost as like a protective skin over that soil. But when you have Asian earthworms in there, they almost make the soil into this granular, it's a pilled soil. It doesn't hold a lot of moisture. And areas that we found it in the Arboretum, you can see in certain areas there seems to, it appears that there's declines in the plantings in there. And in the nursery in particular, which we noticed this, so these earthworms, because of their more active and aggressive nature, they actually will come up and burrow up through the soil and they'll come into nursery planting. So, you know, you can look for them if you're buying nursery stock. You can flip over a planting and you can see that sometimes these worms will be tunneling up into that potted plant. And when it gets into that potted plant, it can start consuming the roots. And then you can see that decline in the planting. And of course, this is something that we need to learn a great deal more about because this is just something that we started to notice in the Arboretum. And like I say, this is such a new discovery for us. We want the public to be aware of it right away and to contact us when they find it.
Hmm. And do we know how they got here?
Well, we assume that they were introduced accidentally through nursery stocks. Because when you go to a nursery, you go to a big box store, you can buy just about anything there. And they're getting their stocks from all over the country. And this worm and species similar to that are rather widely common on the eastern seaboard. And so if you're getting any type of planting from ranging from Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, New York, where this worm is found, you could have the possibility of an accidental introduction. And anytime you move soil, the cocoons are in there, and then they're going to persist. And that's how we assume that it came into the Arboretum.
Well, we're talking with Kelly Kearns today and Bernie Williams of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, taking a look at this crazy worm that has come into Wisconsin. And also, we haven't started talking about it yet, but we will. Kelly's going to give us an update on some invasive plant regulations here in the state of Wisconsin. So we're going to be going through that as well. You may have a question for them. I hope you do. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. That's 1-800-642-1234, the number to call if you'd like to join in. I'm wondering about controlling there. I mean, it seems to me that this would be a very difficult thing to control, this crazy worm.
And it is a very difficult thing to control. And so that's why outreach and education and informing the public right now is the main key to trying to get a better hold on this worm. We are looking at trying possible control methods this fall. So that would involve using a fertilizer that's widely used on golf courses. So not many people are, you know, when you don't golf, and I don't golf and Kelly doesn't golf, you're not aware that one of the biggest problems on golf courses are earthworms. But some of the studies that we've been looking at, they're actually using different types of turf fertilizer to set back populations of both European and Asian earthworms. So we hope to try some controls on that this fall, which will be a very telling study to see whether or not it works.
Let's turn to Nick in Green Bay. Nick, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, me and the kids were at like some type of event where the DNR was giving out cards about invasive species.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was the nightcrawler. And I was wondering if that's actually true, because the nightcrawler, as far as I've been around forever, I mean, when we were kids, we used to get them. So I don't think that the nightcrawler is invasive. But
well, Kelly, what about that?
Well, nightcrawlers are some of the one of the European species of earthworms. It has been around for a long time. It probably came over with Europeans when they brought over plants and soil and other things with them when they first moved to North America. And nightcrawlers are actually the most damaging of all of the European earthworms, in part because it's larger and it burrows much deeper into the soil. It goes down at least a meter deep, and it will reach up from its burrow and grab all the organic matter that it can find and pull that down way down into the deep subsoil. And so what it essentially does in a forest is it removes that litter layer, that organic layer, and rather than allowing it to decompose on the surface of the soil and make that forest a more fertile soil, it takes it way down into the subsoil and leaves only the midribs of the leaves and the other more woody vegetation, woody debris that's up there. And so it actually causes the soil to become very compacted in a forest. And until this crazy worm came in, that was definitely our most invasive of the earthworms.
Yeah, but now it's the crazy.
Right. And I wanted to say something else about the what the crazy worm does to the soil. Essentially, the populations get so high that essentially what they do is they take all the organic matter on the surface of the soil, whether it's in a forest and that's the leaves, or if it's in your landscape and it's mulch that you put down, and they eat it all. And the soil turns out to have this granular structure that Bernie mentioned, because that's actually the earthworm frass or poop.
Casting. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're obviously going to talk some more with our two guests, Kelly Kearns and Bernie Williams of the DNR. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. For many of us, the natural beauty of Wisconsin is one of the best things about living here, and we're lucky to have so many wonderful native species to enjoy. But it doesn't take much to throw the ecosystem out of balance when invasives arrive and start to take over. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guests work very hard to monitor and control the spread of invasive species in our state. And with June being Invasive Species Month, great time to find out about what's going on. Kelly Kearns is the Invasive Plant Coordinator for the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation Program in our Wisconsin DNR. And Kelly, thanks as always for spending time with us.
Sure.
Also with us today, Bernie Williams, who's another guest who's been with us, invasive species specialist with Forest Health of our Wisconsin DNR. And Bernie, great to have you along as well.
Oh, thank you.
We have some callers. We want to talk about these crazy worms and worms in general and night crawlers, but we also want to get into some invasive regulations regarding invasives of all kinds, be they worm or be they plant. And Kelly's got some great information to share about those new rules and regulations. But Don and Brian have both been waiting quite a long time with questions or comments. So let's go to Don in West Bend next. Don, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I look forward to your show every day. I listen every single day. My question about the crazy worm, because of its aggressive nature, would it be a good fish bait, and would the DNR allow it to be a fish bait? What's the status of that? It would seem logical to me, if we want to get rid of it, let sportsmen have at it.
well, and you know, I'm sure that it's a very good bait, but it is a prohibited species within Wisconsin. So Kelly's going to give you an update on some of the new species that we hope to list. But NR40 is the invasive species rule for Wisconsin, so it lists species as restricted, prohibited, and split listed because we know that they're a great threat to our ecosystem. This particular worm we listed in 2009 because we knew that it was a huge threat. And this population that we did find last fall was the first population, and since that time we found another population within Dane County as well. But we hope that this worm is minimally spread throughout the state currently, so that there's only a few populations that we can get on top of it before it becomes widespread. And again, saying that, you know, fishermen, that would be great. You know, if we could do some outreach to anglers and fishermen out there, that if you happen to see this worm being sold in any of the bait stores, or you happen to see it on the internet trade, tell people this isn't a good worm. You don't want to introduce it to Wisconsin.
Yeah, so essentially it is illegal to sell it at, to use it or to buy it in Wisconsin. It can't be sold here. And the reason is because oftentimes fishermen will dump their bait either onshore or in the water. And these worms, as well as worms like night crawlers, can survive for a very long time, even in the water, and then get out on shore and start a new population. We've got a lot of evidence that that's the way that a lot of these areas in the northern forest have actually gotten earthworm infestations is from boat landings where bait worms have probably been cast off.
Okay. Well, there you go, Dan.
Well, that explains that.
All right.
Just one more thing real quick, and maybe it can be just a quick answer. Is buckthorn an invasive species in Wisconsin? Is it native to Wisconsin?
No, if it was native, it be invasive as it is.
Okay.
So buckthorn is extremely invasive, yes.
Yeah.
And it's from Europe.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. Thank you for calling. Brian in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I have a question. These crazy worms are like very aggressive, from what I understand, and they like eat everything. Do you think there's any way we could, turn them on themselves and have them eat each other?
That would be great if they would do that, but they're not cannibalistic. There's flatworms, so there's planaria, and they're actually predatory worms that do feed on other worms, which, in a perfect world, you could do that, but if you were to introduce planaria flatworms that would do this, you would be introducing another invasive species, so you'd just be adding another one into the fold.
Oh. So there you go.
So as far as we know, these earthworms, these crazy worms only feed on plant material. They don't necessarily feed on animal material.
Right.
There you go, Brian. Thanks for calling. Kelly, I want to get to you in terms of this these rule changes proposed to the current Wisconsin regulations on invasive species. Can you fill us in?
Sure. Back in 2001, the state legislature charged Department of Natural Resources with creating rules on invasive species. They wanted us to develop a comprehensive rule. They also wanted us to do that in coordination with the Invasive Species Council that would be appointed by the governor. By 2004, that council was finally appointed, so we were able to start working on these rules. It took us about 5 years by working with a lot of stakeholders and a lot of different organizations to develop this set of rules. And by 2009, we had a set of rules in place that's called NR40. And it establishes both a prohibited and a restricted category for invasive species. The regulations for both of them say that you cannot buy them, you can't sell them, you can't introduce them into the state. You can't transport them around. You can't import them into the state. The only different regulation between the two is that for the prohibited species, you can also not possess them. So the prohibited ones are the ones that are either not yet here in the state or they're only in a few small areas, and we want to keep them out. Wherever they show up, we want to try to prevent them from spreading. The restricted species are the ones like that buckthorn that Brian mentioned that are much more widespread. And we just want to minimize their spread through these regulations. So in 2009, we established this first rule. We very intentionally did not include a lot of the species that had commercial value, some of the things that are sold for ornamental purposes or for forage or for other purposes like that. Over the last couple of years, we've been assessing that whole group of species that people have recommended because they are invasive in one place or another. And we now have a whole set of additional species that we're recommending be added to that NR40, and then have a few other rule changes as well in that NR40. So we're in the public review process right now. We had public hearings last week on these, and we're taking comments through the end of June. And So anybody who wants to submit comments can do that through the end of June.
So how would you do the comments?
We prefer if people can send it by email, and it can go to invasive.species wisconsin.gov, G-O-V. And that, all you have to do is just send in your comment and say if you know what it is that you might support or think needs to be changed about the proposed revisions. And you can find the draft rule on the DNR's website by just typing in NR40 or invasive species.
What kind of impact do invasives have on our Wisconsin economy?
It's highly variable depending on what the species is. When you look at something like emerald ash borer, it's causing essentially all the ash trees in the state to die or to be removed before they die because we know that they'll be dying. We're into millions and millions of dollars there for just that one species alone. There's a number of other forest pests that are similar to that. We have no idea what the impact of this Amynthis crazy worm will be, but we think that it's going to cause really significant impacts. It might cause significant impacts to the nursery and landscape industry, to even the agriculture industry. We're really not sure at this point. So it really varies by species. A lot of the invasive plants, that impact isn't quite as obvious in the short term because it causes long-term impacts such as decline in forest production or changes in prairie establishment, things like that.
Yeah. And, I wondered, what do these things look like, these crazy worms, for example? And, Bernie, you put together a couple of little papers here that were really nice photos, so you can tell how right. They're different from other earthworms, for example.
Right. So they're a very different worm than any of the European species that people would be familiar with. This particular worm, so quick biology lesson on an earthworm. When you look at an earthworm, that fat middle section is the clitellum. So that clitellum area on an earthworm is like, the central nervous system. So everything happens in that area. But on European earthworms, that clitellum is always going to be raised off the body a bit, and it's not going to completely connect all around the body. When you look at an Amythis species of earthworm, the Asian species crazy worm, Alabama jumper, they have a clitellum that is smooth, just like the body. It isn't raised above the body at all. It completely encircles the worm, so it looks different. And it's also that clitellum is almost a milky white gray. So it looks different in its appearance. It's also a darker worm, so it's more gray to black. And with the European species of worms, everybody that's ever put a nightcrawler on their fishing line knows that they're robust and they're pink, but they're not exactly really active, whereas a crazy worm is going to be extremely active. If you try and put it on the line, it'll do almost anything to get away from you.
And people can go online and get a quick look, I assume, at the DNR website.
Yes.
And so I think the one is titled Crazy Worms, and the other is The Problem with Crazy Worms, or is probably all both those are right together, I guess.
Right. And the interesting thing, too, that, when Kelly talks about all of the terrestrial invasive plants that move into the forest and that are widespread throughout Wisconsin, when you have one invasive species, you generally have another. And that's true when you start to look at the relationship of earthworms and invasive species. I mean, you can go to countless areas across the state where you have stands of buckthorn or honeysuckle or garlic mustard. And then you look at the soil surface, the organic material is missing. But in that soil, you also have a lot of invasive earthworms. So they all sort of are in this relationship together. And when they start moving, we start losing the diversity that we see in our natural settings.
Yeah. Jeff in Fond du Lac, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Nice show. My question to your guest is, I wonder if you're familiar or what they're planning on doing with the Phragmites infestation in Supley's Marsh near Fond du Lac.
Not that particular site.
Wait a minute. Now you don't know what you're going to be doing, or you won't be doing anything.
Indicate that or not?
Yeah. He's wondering if there's going to be a plan to eradicate.
Eradicating Phragmites in the Fond du Lac area would be impossible. At this point, it's extremely abundant in the whole Fox Valley area, and eradication is not a goal for a situation like that when you have an extremely widespread, abundant invasive species.
What is the goal, and just to kind of control it? Or
at this point, the goal for Phragmites is to try to identify where it's spreading, where there's new infestations in the state. Essentially, we've mapped all of the occurrences that have been reported to us throughout the state and have identified that essentially it's mostly along the Lake Michigan and Lake Superior shore and then moving inland from there. And so we actually have a grant from the federal government right now to do control on those more western populations. So areas where it's just starting to get into some of the counties in the central part of the state or further into the western part of the state. And so that's where we're focusing right now is those new populations in order to keep it out of those areas. It's a lot harder to deal with a population that's super abundant, such as some of the ones in the Fox Valley area.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, for calling. I want to give Kay and Prairie to Sheen a chance to join in. Hi, Kay, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering on this here crazy worm. Now, the thing of it is with fishing, I've noticed a lot of... Now, I didn't hear all what the man had to say towards the end because I was getting pen and paper. But I was wondering if, you know, or I was... thinking, I do a lot of fishing. I've done it for 56 years or better, late 50s, early 60s until now. And I have seen so many fishermen, when they have leftover worms, throw them on the bank or whatever, let them loose.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that as far as much as I love fishing, this sounds like a fascinating bait. I really... hope to God somebody doesn't get them and start raising them and selling them, because it would be a
disaster.
It would be a very big disaster. And I remember, and it would be about in the late 50s, early 60s, I was, my cousin had taken me fishing, and my uncle had bought us some, what he called African wigglers. And these worms were like night crawlers, and they wiggled so crazy. And I was wondering if that might have been one and the same years ago. And I don't know if they, because I haven't heard of them since.
Yeah. I don't know. Sounds like a common name for something.
Right.
Bernie, do you, any?
Well, I mean, there's always a possibility. I mean, with this one, I mean, so if that was back in the 50s, most of the information that we're finding on Amythes and all the species within that family, so you look at it, there are variations. So we believe that we have Amythes agrestis within Wisconsin, but if you go to New York or Massachusetts, they have Amythes agrellis. So there's variations in that. I hope it wasn't an introduction point. And we do quite a few surveys all across the state yearly. And, you know, hopefully this was a good thing that we only found them in Madison this past fall. And I've been doing surveys in the state for 4 years now. And there's been many researchers that have been doing surveys since 1972. And this was the first occurrence for us to find this species. So we're still pretty optimistic that we can get on top of it before it becomes widespread in the state.
There we go. Thank you, Kay, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's give Mike in Castle Rock a chance. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I live in Grant County, and we have a plague of wild parsnips. And it's spread mainly by the county road department. And also, where I happen to live, a lot of the property is owned by the DNR, and we can't get them to mow it.
So...
Okay, so the problem with parsnip is if you mow a little bit too late, you're going to be spreading those seeds rather than stopping it. And so ideally in southern Wisconsin, if you're going to be mowing, you should be doing it now in an area that has parsnips, because it's currently in flower, and if you do it while it's still in flower, then you're not going to be able to spread those seeds, and you'll actually keep it from producing seed this year. We've been working since 2009 with the highway departments trying trying to make sure that they don't spread the seeds. It's actually one of the things through the NR40 is requiring that you don't transport invasive plants around. And so we've developed a best management practices for highway departments that include mowing at the right time in order to minimize that spread. Some highway departments are doing a great job on this and have identified where their invasive plants are throughout the county, and they've often had volunteer groups of invasive plant groups that have been actually out there helping them. Other counties are a little bit further behind and still need a little more encouragement. So it sounds like you might want to talk with your county highway department and point out where these areas are and encourage them to mow those areas at this time of year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Matt in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. It seems to me, listening to all this talk, that these invasive species are, in general, much hardier and stronger than their brothers or sisters that are the natural to their
natives.
Location. Is that true?
In general, that's the case, and that's because they've been introduced without the predators, the parasites, the competitors that they evolved with in their home country. So, for example, a multiflora rose, which was introduced here, back in probably the 30s, in Eurasia, where it's native, there's lots of insects that feed on it. Here, there's not so many. And so it can spread much easily here because it can grow much more robustly because it doesn't have the things keeping it in check.
Virginia creeper, then, its natural-born enemy would be West Virginia? Or
yeah.
Virginia creeper is an interesting native, very aggressive vine. And one of the things that has allowed it to be so aggressive is just the fact that it really does well on edges of forest. And we, in our current landscape, we have lots of forest edges. Back when Wisconsin was not, had very low human population, we had much more heavy forested areas and savannas and prairies, and Virginia creeper would probably just be more on the edges of those different habitats. And now we have those edges in everyone's yard.
Yeah. And the European, Connie had wondered, why these European earthworms are, she grew up in southern Germany. And the fauna and climate, she thought, similar to here. So why is it a problem here and not there? Well, there, I would think there were natural, perhaps natural predators. Is that probably what's going on, Kelly?
Bernie, you might have some more research on that.
Well, so when you look at the European species, when we look at all of our European species of earthworms within Wisconsin currently, we have 21 species, and we can take them all back to their origin in various areas of Europe. But they do have natural predators and insects there. But also when you look at the soil and the native plants that are growing there, they were there with the earthworms. When you look at Wisconsin, because of the glacier that moved across Wisconsin roughly 10,000 years ago, the regeneration of our natural forest occurred without the presence of earthworms.
Yeah.
So it changes. And there's, the fungal relationships, the mycorrhizae, it's different wherever you are.
Different wherever you are. You're exactly right. And I want to tell people, go to the Department of Natural Resources website. You're going to learn some more about the crazy worms. You're going to also learn about the plant regulations that Kelly was talking about. I really appreciate them both being with us today. Kelly Kearns and Bernie Williams of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. We're out of time, as a matter of fact. Just to let you know, tomorrow, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Renan from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection join us to talk about current scams going on here in Wisconsin. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.